Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. President Salva Kiir accepts to negotiate with holdout rebel groups in South Sudan.
When I signed this peace agreement, which we are always talking about, I signed it in this hall for the sake of the people of South Sudan.
And South Sudan health officials are on high alert following the identification of a new COVID-19 variant in South Africa.
I want to assure you that we as Ministry of Health are on track with WHO recommendations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says his government is ready to resume negotiations with holdout rebel groups that refused to sign the 2018 peace deal. Mr. Kiir says the community of St. Gidiu should call the holdout groups under the umbrella of the South Sudan Opposition Movement Alliance, or SOMA, back to Rome to discuss peace. Addressing governors of the country's 10 states and 3 administrative areas in Juba today, President Kiir said he wants to negotiate with the holdout groups to end violence in the country.
When I signed this peace agreement, which we are always talking about, I signed it in this hall for the sake of the people of South Sudan.
He said the Vatican also called on him to sit down with holdout groups to find a lasting solution to South Sudan's political crisis.
Many voices have appealed to us to reconsider our position and give the inclusive peace a chance. Yes, because of this, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has been continuously praying for South Sudan and has been appealing to me to let the peace talks resume. I will now call on Saint Egidio to begin the preparations for the resumption of the Rome peace talks.
The government of South Sudan suspended talks with SOMA in August after President Salva Kiir accused the rebels of the National Salvation Front of carrying out road ambushes on the Juba-Nimule Highway. He says his government has changed its position on the talks.
I am today asking the community of Saint Egidio to begin the preparation for the resumption of Rome peace talks with the whole loud groups without any preconditions.
The South Sudan Opposition Alliance is made up of the Real SPLM, the South Sudan United Front, and the National Salvation Front. The umbrella group denied attacking vehicles on the Juba-Nimule Highway. Kiir says he urged SOMA to work for peace.
I hope SOMA this time will adhere to cessation of hostilities agreement in order to give room to negotiations that will move the talks on without further interruption.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where the head of humanitarian affairs in Sudan's West Darfur state says the situation in Jebel Moon locality has deteriorated because of a lack of access to the area. Omar Abdul Karim Ahmed says more than 1,000 families displaced by the ongoing fighting lack basic needs. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
An official in West Darfur state says accessing some villages in Jebel Moon remain a challenge due to continued violence between herders and farmers in the area. Witnesses told this program last week that at least 26 people were killed, 13 villages burned down, and more than 10,000 people were displaced. The UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan said more than 4,300 people have been affected by clashes that broke out between farmers from Misiria and Arab nomads in West Darfur state Jebel Moon locality. Omar Abdul Karim Ahmed heads the state's humanitarian department. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone from Al Janina town on Tuesday, Ahmed says thousands of families displaced by the violence are facing many challenges. He says the area remains inaccessible due to heavy fighting between pastoralists and farmers.
The fighting is still continuing between the two tribes in isolated skirmishes. We have not seen any solution reached on the issue. The humanitarian situation remains difficult. Thousands of families lack food, shelter, health services, and even security. There are women and children who are currently staying in the open. They don't have clothes, food, or medicines.
Ahmed says some humanitarian agencies in the area have suspended their activities due to insecurity. He says an assessment team was sent to Selia and Eastern Chad, but it was unable to access other areas in Jebel Moon due to security threats.
Some of them sought refuge in Chad. Some were in Selia, some in Kulbus locality and its surrounding villages, and some managed to arrive in Al Jenena. But up to this moment, we can't determine the exact number of people who have been affected, as the security situation remains a challenge.
Last week, some members of the Darfur Women Forum expressed concern over the fate of women displaced by the fighting. The activists say women need protection because they are in the first line of defense. Ahmed is appealing to international humanitarian aid agencies in Sudan to intervene and rescue the people in need. He says he thinks Darfur is not getting enough political attention from Sudan's national government.
All the peace agreements signed in the past are politically motivated and did not have an impact on the social peace among different tribes. Our leaders in West Darfur are contributing to the humanitarian crisis. Unless there is a serious and a genuine social peace in this state, there will be no stability, no development, or provision of services.
South Sudan in Focus made several calls to the acting Darfur regional governor, Muhammad Ileu, for comments, but he said he was busy in meetings. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we go back to Juba, where a famous South Sudanese writer and senior lecturer at University of Juba says most institutions of learning in South Sudan are, quote, manufacturing graduates. Professor Taban Loliong says the quality of teaching at various institutions of learning in some East African countries, including South Sudan, does not meet the minimum required standards. He says institutions of higher learning should employ qualified teaching staff to produce qualified graduates.
And also, Nairobi is not doing as much as we wished it could, because we were there. I put a lot of energy there. Ngugi put a lot of energy there. Okot put a lot of energy there. David Rubadiri put a lot of energy there. And scholars, there's only one good one who is in America, a critic from Makerere, from the school, no, from Nairobi, from the school of those who said, let us have African, well, let us have African literature predominating in the curriculum of Makerere or any African university or Nairobi and so on and so forth. And we don't have too many of those. One wished we would have the university say, the professor of literature in Makerere would be the one who has done a PhD on what, Papitech. Without that, you don't deserve to be the professor of literature in Makerere if we don't have the best brains in Makerere to study and to teach and to be the authority on Way Parliament, for example, or on Ngugi's writings, or that is for Kenyans, or David Rubadiri for Malawi, and so on and so forth. One wonders, when are we going to say, okay, the authorities on every subject in the world for a national university would be the best studied person in that university. Somebody who has gone to the universities, native or foreign, and has done very, very well, has become the authority, that authority should be brought to the university. And it should be the one who is leading it. And it should be there an icon to be seen, to be presented to visitors.
Yeah, you were asking about why Makerere is not producing. Somebody will ask you, what is Juba University producing?
I don't know.
But you are teaching here, Professor.
Yes. No, I came from outside. I came and found here a syllabus. And when I wondered, what are they doing here? What are they doing here? And of course, I'm asking from outside. I'm not an administrator. And then I don't know how much the authorities, care about scholarship. I don't think they care much about pure scholarship, about high scholarship, and I don't know why. Maybe it is because the nation doesn't want to be told that we are backwards. We don't want to admit it. We don't want to talk about it. But we want to give out degrees, masters, PhDs, and so on and so forth. Without examining the contents, how much of it is deep scholarship? How much of it can be weighed on a national or international weighing machine to say, okay, this teacher in this university deserves being there because he has done the following thing, A, B, C, D. In some of our universities, we do have medical schools without laboratories. We do have science departments without laboratories. I don't know how the scientists graduate in some of those universities. I don't know. But maybe if the nation was serious, it would have ask a question for the universities to justify themselves. But they don't seem to care much about that one. We only care about how many degrees have you got, how many degrees have you given, how many people got PhDs, and so on. And some universities, some colleges, which are simply there to manufacture degree holders. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds serious.
Huh? Very, very serious.
Let me use your word. Some colleges are there to manufacture degree holders.
To manufacture degree holders. Yeah, that's the whole point. It is bad. And I'm admitting it. Because at least at my age of 85 or 86, somehow or other, the rough people leave it alone to say, okay, let him talk his last maybe next year or the other year to come, he will be dead. So why do you want to go and rebuke an old man and so on and so forth? So I do it. I do it, the criticism, because I used to be so strict in criticizing Kenyans when I was in Kenya, right? And then I hate it if Kenyans come here and then they try to say, where is the revolutionary of the 1965, 66, 67? We are no longer there. And we are no longer in Kenya or in Nairobi or here. Mm-hmm. At least here also, now we are getting writers. Also, I'm happy about it. South Sudan has already started producing very good pieces of work. Mm. We have novels, we have autobiographies, and then we have political writings, and so on. We do have some, and it is good that at least now I cannot cry about literary barrenness.
That's Professor Taban Loliong, a senior lecturer at the College of Education at the University of Juba. He spoke with me from Juba. In part three of this interview, Loliong talks about the role of artists and journalists in South Sudan. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, health authorities are on high alert in South Sudan. Find out why after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a closer look at South Sudan's responses to the COVID-19 pandemic. Health authorities in South Sudan are on high alert following the identification of a new COVID-19 variant in South Africa. The acting COVID-19 incident manager in South Sudan says health experts are carrying out sequencing efforts to know if the Omicron variant is in the country. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
The National Institute for Communicable Diseases in South Africa said last week it has identified a new variant of the virus that causes COVID-19 called Omicron. The World Health Organization says the variant appears to have a large number of mutations. Dr. John Remunu is the acting COVID-19 incident manager and director general for preventive health services at the National Minister of Health. He says experts in South Sudan are getting advice from the World Health Organization on how to prepare for the new COVID-19 variant.
I want to assure you that we as Ministry of Health are on track with WHO recommendations. The recommendation to member states is to enhance surveillance and sequencing efforts so as to understand the circulating variants. And I want to let you know that we are up to date with that. We just sent samples out a week ago. Actually, we are waiting now for the results.
Dr. Romano says the ministry will continue with testing at different laboratories to ensure the new variant is detected quickly when it reaches the country.
We also have epidemiological surveillance in place. In fact, how many labs have reported in the last 24 hours? We have 11 from public labs, including the National Public Health Laboratory, as well as those in the states. And then we have 8 private labs testing COVID-19 in Juba, and also the testing of arrivals at Juba International Airport and Nimule. So with this, epidemiological surveillance and lab surveillance are also being performed to know exactly what variants we have. I think when it comes here, we'll be able to catch it.
Dr. Sacha Butsma is the WHO's incident manager for COVID-19 in South Sudan. She says there is very little information about the new variant and researchers working around the clock to understand its mutations. She says it will take a few weeks for medical experts to receive an update on any health complications related to the Omicron variant.
So WHO, in the meantime, recommends countries to share genomic sequencing of the samples, something that South Sudan is now also adhering to, and to focus on, again, strengthening of these public health measures to reduce the risk of exposure to the virus. Get vaccinated, wear a mask, keep a distance, avoid poorly ventilated or crowded spaces, keep your hands clean, and cough or sneeze into your elbow. So, because we're saying the more that COVID-19 circulates, the more opportunities the virus has to change and the more mutations we will see.
Butsma says the public should continue with recommended COVID-19 precautions to reduce the circulation of the virus. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still on COVID, despite criticism of Western nations for banning travel from Southern Africa over the new Omicron variant, countries in Africa are beginning to take similar steps. Morocco and Rwanda are the latest to ban flights to ward off the new variant, which was first reported in South Africa. Health experts have been quick to dismiss the ban and say countries should instead focus on getting their population vaccinated. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Britain, the European Union, the US and some African countries have imposed bans of flights from South Africa and several neighboring countries. South African officials quickly denounced the new restrictions. Speaking Sunday, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said the travel ban will hinder his country's ability to fight the new variant.
The prohibition of travel is not informed by science, nor will it be effective in preventing the spread of this variant. The only thing the prohibition on travel will do is to further damage the economies of the affected countries and undermine their ability to respond to and also to recover from the pandemic.
Last week, South Africa detected a new COVID variant that is believed to be highly transmittable and vaccine-resistant. The variant Omicron has been reported in several other countries. Catherine Kyoktunji is the head of the African Population and Health Research Center. She says scientists are working to see whether the coronavirus variant Omicron is more dangerous than the Delta variant, the most contagious form of coronavirus that has spread worldwide.
Delta, it's estimated that for every case, it's able to infect between 5 and 8. For the original variant was about between 2 and 3. So if this is more transmissible, then it means more trouble, really, for the world and for Africa. Now, the second thing they're trying to find out is if it causes either different symptoms or causes more severe disease. So if it's more transmissible, causes more severe disease, it means that the world is in for a rough ride because more epidemics, more outbreaks, more waves that are more severe.
Health experts warn the world faces more trouble if the COVID-19 vaccines cannot help fight the new variant. However, the World Health Organization has warned against imposing a travel ban on countries and instead called for taking a scientific approach in dealing with the outbreak. Chibuzo Opara is the head of DrugsTalk, an African cloud-based platform that improves access to pharmaceutical and healthcare products. He says African countries will need to revive the previous health measures taken to combat the spread of the coronavirus.
I think the most important thing is sharing of information. I think we need to look to the ports of entries to improve surveillance and monitoring. I think it's very important to also step up the vaccination campaigns, the travel requirements for screening should also be harmonized, and it should be, I think we can easily step up those without necessarily harming the economy or a lot of the infrastructure that was there during the pandemic and into this period is still around and can be ramped up really easily.
Some experts also warn new lockdown measures could be needed to prevent transmission of Omicron. So far, South Africa has refrained from taking that kind of step. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
At least 5 million people have had their lives cut short by COVID-19. The best defense against the virus is a vaccine. And since the outbreak of the pandemic, scientists have focused on developing them. VOA's Carol Pearson explains some of the different approaches to making effective vaccines.
Some people think if you get sick after being vaccinated, the vaccine has failed, but that's not true. Several studies show the chances of being hospitalized or dying from COVID-19 are severely reduced for people who are vaccinated. The oldest vaccine-making methods use either a live virus or a dead one to spark an immune response. Different polio vaccines have used both. Three COVID-19 vaccines use weakened adenoviruses, which are viruses that cause colds. The Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine uses a chimpanzee adenovirus that has been weakened so it can't make people sick. Sputnik V and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine use weakened human adenoviruses that can cause colds. The American Society for Gene and Cell Therapy explains how scientists make these vaccines. Scientists removed the gene from the coronavirus's spike protein and put it into the adenoviruses. They also removed the gene in the adenovirus that can cause illness. Think of the adenovirus as an envelope with a message inside. The message tells the cells to make the spike protein. The body makes antibodies to defend itself. If it sees the spike protein again, the body is prepared to attack. Both Johnson & Johnson and Sputnik V's first doses are made with a rare human adenovirus, AD25. Johnson & Johnson used to be considered a one-dose vaccine, but in October, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's advisory board recommended that a booster be used to increase its effectiveness. The second dose of Sputnik V contains AD5, an adenovirus people are frequently exposed to. Scientists are concerned that Sputnik V doesn't offer enough protection against COVID-19. There are other ways to make vaccines that do not use viruses or bacteria, what scientists call pathogens, that could cause disease. The latest method involves messenger RNA vaccines, or mRNA vaccines, which are produced by Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech. The side effects can include mild soreness, muscle pain, and fatigue. Rest, fluids, and non-prescription pain relievers should help. Cox says it's not surprising that researchers could develop mRNA vaccines against COVID-19 so quickly. COVID-19 isn't the first attempt at using this technology. There's an advantage of having so many vaccines against COVID-19. The whole world needs to be vaccinated. Hondurans are even willing to cross a river to get the vaccine in neighboring Nicaragua. Another advantage is that scientists might be able to figure out which vaccines work best for different people. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Dismay Joyce and the song Shen Shen. Listening to Dismay Joyce and their classic song Shen Shen. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us this evening into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.